everyone. Our first case this morning is State v. Richard Pester. We should all note that Judge Irwin of the Court of Appeals is joining the rest of the court this morning. And with that, Mr. Island, good morning to you. You may approach. Proceed.
All right. This court has actually already laid the foundation for this case when it decided State versus Modlin, which was decided the day my brief was filed, and didn't have much chance to address it. But in that case, this court correctly noted that implied consent is not Fourth Amendment consent. They're different. And they went through an exception analysis in order to determine whether or not that would act as an involuntary consent to the blood test. And the issue is that Missouri versus McNeely made clear that there is no per se exception to the warrant requirement. You can't just say, okay, this situation means you're going to have to give a blood test no matter what. And what happened in that case, and I think the Idaho case of Wolf really makes a good point, that an implied consent law that is absolutely irrevocable no matter what creates a per se exception, which was invalidated by McNeely, and therefore not applicable in this case. And so when you're looking at the issues in this case, we look at, do we have a privacy interest, which has clearly been determined by Skinner, even for breath test. When we penetrate the body, seek deep lung air and the alveolar air, that's going to be an analysis of the contents, and it's going to be similar to the Schmerber analysis that we do have a Fourth Amendment protected interest in blood. So you have that interest, which needs to be protected, and the way we do that is through a warrant. If
can you help us out here? Because I think you're jumping from breath to blood. Are you equating them in all cases?
They are. The issue is their blood or breath are the same thing.
Blood, breath, what is the situation here? It's blood, is it not?
I believe it may have been breath, if I remember correctly. And that's why I think it's important that we note that it's the per se exception, which is the problem. It's not whether it's blood or breath.
Because the officer's testimony here is breath, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's
and
why
then,
I think it's
And
breath.
Then let's just fast forward. The U.S. Supreme Court has granted cert in three cases, correct?
That is true.
And what does the certified question pertain to, do you recall?
You know, I thought it was whether or not... Actually, I think there are three different issues. It's constitutionality of creating criminalization for... the breath, I think, for enhancement, and I think for administrative issue. I think it's across the board.
I think their certified question states that it is with respect to blood tests.
Okay.
So what do we expect to learn?
Then I apologize for that.
That's why I asked the question. Yeah. Should we be more precise on blood and breath, or shall we wait to hear?
I think that's going to help direct us, but I think whether it's blood or breath is irrelevant when you look at Skinner. They tried to make that distinguishing factor in Skinner versus BNSF, Railroad U.S. Supreme Court case, and they said it's just as important an analysis because you can find out all sorts of information about the body by collecting the breath, and therefore they adopted the Schmerber analysis of Fourth Amendment protections.
But you don't puncture the body. You don't invade the body in that way.
That's true, but if I stick a hard piece of plastic and thrust it into your mouth and tell you you need to blow into it, I've pierced the body. I have now invaded the oral cavity of it, and it's still just as invasive when we have such a personal privacy interest in our own bodies and our own person.
Is Skinner a criminal case?
Skinner was not a criminal case. It was a civil case, actually, where they extended the privilege and said you had that protection.
Could the legislature maybe in the future say that if you want to apply for a driver's license, you're going to consent to blood tests if you're operating and stopped as a result of either being under the influence of drugs or alcohol?
No, they couldn't, because
Why?
That would be a per se exception to the warrant requirement.
Isn't driving a privilege?
It is a privilege, and you can create administrative sanctions or penalties in order to...
Couldn't the state deny you a driver's license?
Yes, they could deny that. You'd have a due process right to go through that hearing, but to determine why they had denied you and whether it was proper.
They would deny you if you didn't agree to have a blood test or a urine test or some other test when you were stopped for suspicion of DUI.
Right, and that's why we have an administrative license revocation process, is to create that administrative remedy for people who don't agree to submit to blood, breath, or urine tests.
In Modlin, we determined that there was a consent issue, and we determined that the motorist had given consent. Here, there wasn't any consent because your client didn't take the test.
Actually, he revoked his consent by saying, I don't want to give you a sample. That's a revocation of consent. That's saying, look, I'm requiring you as a citizen to go get a warrant. Go get your warrant. It's not that hard, actually. And then you can collect it from under the warrant requirement.
Well, if it's not that hard and simple matter, what's the purpose of requiring a warrant on a breath test?
Because then we still have the protections of a neutral and detached magistrate determining whether or not it's proper to obtain some type of invasion of a person's privacy interest. It's not hard to get a warrant in any case, whether it's a search of a house, whether it's a search of a person, whether it's a search of a briefcase that they've seized, whatever it is. But we still require it because that's a fundamental concept of our Constitution, that our persons and our property are protected under the Fourth Amendment, and that because of that protection, they're not going to be allowed to invade it without a warrant by a neutral and detached magistrate.
I understood the position in your brief to be that you don't contend it is a constitutional violation to impose administrative penalties for refusal. Is that correct?
Correct. Under Neville, I think that's what's made clear, because that was a civil case, and that's different. That's an administrative penalty or administrative remedy in order to correct a potential problem. And that's what's still available to our states and to our legislatures for people who decide that they want to revoke their consent.
Is it your position that it always offends the Constitution if there is a criminal penalty imposed for something like a breath test, for refusing a breath test?
Yes. It would be if, yes, refusing to, because now you're creating a criminal sanction for assertion of a constitutional right.
Well, then why isn't it a violation of the Constitution for there to be a criminal penalty for resisting arrest?
You don't have a right to resist arrest.
Why do you have a right to refuse a breath test?
Because I have a Fourth Amendment protection in my personal body interest. If an officer says I'm under arrest, they have whatever reasonable suspicion or probable cause to make that, then they're allowed to do that. I'm not allowed to resist it. And I bring the issue before a neutral and detached magistrate for trial issues to determine if that's proper, or to a jury whether it occurred. In this case, we're talking about Fourth Amendment invading the body, much like when we talk about whether someone going to jury trial can be punished, whether someone who asserts their right to remain silent can be commented on, whether we can punish people for asserting any of those rights, or to say, you're searching my house, the state couldn't say, go ahead, search my house, you know what, now I'm going to revoke that consent, get out of my house, and they can say, that's a crime now. That has been repeatedly determined to be unconstitutional, invalid application of the Fourth Amendment to these issues. I do want to spend just a moment on the other issue, which is the actual physical control issue. I think when you have trespassing and open a public access, those terms are mutually exclusive. They cannot cooperate or be open together. Trespassing means you do not have license or privilege to be there. Therefore, much like in McCabe, the private driveways case, you are protected against being...
Well, how do you think the driver got there? In his car.
Well, that's
on
a different
private
issue.
Property. Well,
and that becomes State versus Martin. Then you got to prove if they were driving on a public street or highway that they were under the influence, or we need a separate jury instruction to explain the difference, or we need some other type of analysis. But I think the court has said if you're on private property, not open to public access, and in this case, the defendant got there, stayed there, got drunk there, and then was contacted by the police. So he didn't drive there. That's not an issue in this case. And that's the
problem. That's according to his testimony.
There's nothing to rebut it. There's no other testimony to suggest it's wrong.
It's whether it's believable or not. He went to some private property in the middle of the night and then started drinking, as opposed to being there and getting tired and drunk and then falling asleep or almost fallen asleep by pulling into that spot.
Well, except for the evidence, yeah, it may be an issue of credibility, but that's then you get into a Martin issue if you're going to deal with that versus was he driving at a time when he was drunk on a place that was open to private property, and that was not addressed either, and the evidence would be insufficient under that. So I think that's a problem here. It's more like McCabe versus the apartment lots where people are generally allowed to use in general, that people are going to have access, that people are going to be driving, we need to protect them. It's not like that. It's like McCabe where you have a private drive case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. The police court, Nathan Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. As far as the first issue, the constitutionality or refusal statute, the court's obviously aware that this exact issue is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court. Based on my review, there's nothing that distinguishes this case from those cases, so we maintain that it would make sense to wait for the U.S. Supreme Court to decide those cases before deciding this one, at least on this issue.
What do those cases involve?
They involve the constitutionality of criminalizing refusal to submit to a chemical test. And you were asking earlier, the exact issue presented in the petitions for writ of cert is whether, in the absence of a warrant, a state may make it a crime for a person to refuse to take a chemical test to detect the presence of alcohol in the person's blood.
So the question, the certified question, is not whether it's a blood test, but it's whether it's a chemical test?
The question presented in both petitions for cert is just phrased as chemical test. It's the same language in both.
So is a breath test a chemical test?
I believe it would be, Your Honor. I think blood and breath are both considered chemical
tests. So there's no legal distinction between taking a blood test or taking a breath test?
I think both would be subject to Fourth Amendment. I mean, I think we could all agree that blood tests are more intrusive in nature, but for Fourth Amendment purposes, I'm not sure that there's any distinction.
Is that a concession?
No, Your Honor. I'm just saying, my knowledge. As far as the issue in general, again, we would maintain it would make sense to wait, but I guess I'll just take a run at our general response here. The claim is that it's unconstitutional in the Fourth Amendment to penalize refusal to submit to a chemical test. The state's overarching response, or our short answer, is that it's appellant's burden to establish the statute is unconstitutional. They failed to do so. The longer answer would be that the appellant's not provided any authority or even the framework which establishes that this would be unconstitutional. And I'm not sure what the framework would be. This claim doesn't really fit within the Fourth Amendment framework because the Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures. No search took place in this case.
Is there an implied consent to this type of search when you drive a motor vehicle?
Well, there is, but Maudlin makes it clear that implied consent alone is not enough. I mean, you still have the option of refusing, and Mr. Pester did, in fact, refuse. So the notion that he didn't have a choice but to take the test doesn't hold any water here because he did refuse. He had that choice, and he exercised that choice. So I'm not quite sure how we jump into the Fourth Amendment framework. There needs to be some connection or some nexus to the Fourth Amendment to even get to that framework. I'm not sure what it is. It may be this unconstitutional conditions doctrine that the amicus brief has laid out. If that's the case, I guess our response is threefold. First, I think this court could conclude that issue wasn't presented below, that was never presented to the trial court. States never had an opportunity to address that doctrine. It appears to me that it's a separate doctrine. It's broader than just the Fourth Amendment. It doesn't arise out of any particular amendment. It certainly seems like a separate constitutional challenge that should have been raised below. Second, even if the issue is preserved, the unconstitutional conditions doctrine does not seem to apply here. I haven't had much of a chance to look into it, given that it was just raised for the first time in the amicus brief. But as I understand it, it's saying that you can't condition the benefit or some sort of privilege upon a defendant waiving or giving up a constitutional right. And I think the argument here or the rationale would be that you can't condition the privilege of driving upon the requirement that defendants just automatically give up their right to refuse searches. And I would say that this principle doesn't apply here because a person does have a right to refuse a search. at least in Nebraska, and Modlin makes that clear, and again, Mr. Pester exercised that right in this case. So we don't have somebody in Nebraska being required to give up their right to refuse. They can't. So I don't think that doctrine applies here. And third...
Well, what's the what is the consequences of his refusal?
Subject to the same penalties as DUI under 60-6197.03. And I guess my third and final response, overarching response, would be that even if this issue is preserved and even if this court finds that we do get under the Fourth Amendment framework, we would nonetheless not have a Fourth Amendment violation here, given that implied consent statutes have survived virtually every constitutional challenge they've encountered. The language in Neville suggests, it strongly suggests, that there's no problem with penalizing somebody for refusing to submit to a chemical test, and it goes even further and explains that it's not unconstitutional to use that evidence against the defendant at trial as substantive evidence in a DUI case, for which a person will be penalized if they're convicted. And then finally, I think the language of McNeely, it's dicta, but I think that language also tends to indicate that the U.S. Supreme Court has no problem with refusal statutes.
What was the posture of the cases that the U.S. Supreme Court granted certiorari on? Who won in the court below? Where did it come from? State courts, federal courts, how did it get there?
Both were, I think the one actually, I indicated in my motion for stay that the U.S. Supreme Court has granted certain three cases. I think it's actually only two. I think I may have been incorrect on that. The other one's still pending. But the two that have cert has in fact been granted on both state courts. In the first one, the state won in both cases. In the first one, Bernard out of Minnesota, the state court relied on search incident to arrest. And both state courts just sort of jumped into a Fourth Amendment analysis. And again, I'm not quite clear how we get there, but both of them did. Bernard in Minnesota, they said it's as valid as a search incident to arrest to the extent that we have a Fourth Amendment claim. The search would have nonetheless been lawful as a search incident to arrest.
That was a breath test. That was a breath issue. Is that correct?
I don't recall what the requested test was. Both are refusal cases, but I don't recall what the requested chemical test was. And then Birchfield out of North Dakota, they again just sort of jumped into the Fourth Amendment and said, "Well, we don't have a problem here anyway because the Fourth Amendment nonetheless would not have been violated if the search had taken place." They have various grounds. They went with sort of a reasonableness test under the Fourth Amendment. They pointed to the dicta in McNeely. They pointed out that other courts have almost uniformly upheld implied consent laws. And then they also distinguished the Camara case that the defendants relied on and that the defendants are relying on.
And the third one is Balin, and that's a blood test, is it not?
I don't know, Your Honor. I Googled that yesterday, and it looked like cert had not yet been granted, and unless I'm wrong on that,
Well, if the certified question involves blood test, would that make a difference? But your advice is we should wait nevertheless.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it would certainly help to wait, because they might say there is no distinction. I certainly don't want to make any concessions on something that's significant. I don't know if there's a distinction on here between blood and breath. I mean, like I answered in response to Justice Evigan, one's certainly more intrusive. And I mean, I think that certainly could matter. I just don't know what weight the U.S. Supreme Court may give.
This case is a refusal of a breath test.
Yes.
That correct on the record?
That's correct.
Thank you.
There are no further questions on the refusal issue. I'll briefly address the remaining two issues. As far as the validity of the arrest for DUI, the only contested issue on appeal is whether the arresting officer had probable cause to believe Mr. Pester was on private property open to public access, i.e. property which the public has permission or the ability to enter. The state maintains that the answer is yes, given that he was parked at a farm implement business, which is located just on the highway. There were two entrances to the business, both of which were accessible from the public roadway. There are no barriers, gates, or signs indicating public was not permitted to enter after the business was closed. And Mr. Pester himself conceded in his brief that the property was used for commercial purposes. In light of this evidence, we submit the officer clearly had probable cause to believe he was on property open to public access, or alternatively, the officer would have probable cause to believe he had driven on a public roadway prior to getting to this business while he was under the influence of the alcohol. Especially when Mr. Pester himself acknowledged to the officer that he'd been drinking and told the officer that he pulled over to sleep because he was tired. In light of this evidence, however, we think either reasoning provided a valid basis to conclude he either drove on the public roadway or was on the property open to public access while under the influence of alcohol.
And Mr. Pester testified and told the jury his version of events.
He did.
Okay.
He did. Yeah.
Did he make a contrary statement to the officer when he was arrested?
Well, to the extent you'd say that he claimed he pulled over because he was tired, yeah, that would be contrary. And for purposes of probable cause determination, we would consider the evidence adduced at the suppression hearing as well. So, yeah, that would be conflicting. Just briefly, as far as the appellant's assertion that this is just merely a trespass case, that's not true. The officer testified that he made contact with Mr. Pester for several reasons, not just trespassing. But in any event, as we pointed out in our brief, the basis for the initial contact has no validity or no bearing on the validity of the arrest.
Well, the initials, there wasn't a stop, really, was there? He just walked up to the car and asked him to roll down the window, and then when the window was rolled down, he smelled the alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, he was already stopped. He just approached the car that was already stopped.
There's no stop there. The police officer made it at that point, just walked up to see what was going on.
There really was no stop, but there's been no challenge below or now on appeal to the validity of the stop or the detention.
The initial contact, you're saying? No challenge to the initial contact.
To the initial contact or the subsequent detention during which he's speaking with the defendant in the field sobriety
test. And then facts evolve.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
There are no other questions. We would ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have time for rebuttal?
We have 7 seconds.
7 seconds, Mr. Island. You can actually take 30 seconds if you wish.
Oh, okay.
Regarding the actual physical control issue, I think it's important to realize that you still have to make the arrest, you still have to have probable cause. You have to know that someone's on a highway or a private property open to public access, and that's the issue here.
Is the location of the implement place in the record? Which one it was?
I believe it is. There's some pictures, I know.
Sandberg?
No, that's a different place.
Frank?
Sorry.
Frank Implement,
okay. Yes.
Okay, I know where it is now.
But the problem is it's just like in McCabe. The state made the argument you can drive into the driveway, and therefore it's got to be open to public access. And this court said, no, that's not the case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is Adair Asset Management LLC versus Terry's Legacy LLC. Mr. Huff, good morning to you.
Good morning.